Hello, World Weavers, and welcome back to the Atlas Loom, an exploration of world building for tabletop and beyond. My name is Endeavorance, one of your two lovely hosts, and with me, as always, is Diana, a woman who once bathed in the rejuvenating blood of 100 virgins before being buried alive. How's it going, Diana?
Who told you it was only 100? It was like 3 at least.
That's impressive. How do you find all of them?
I play video games and play D&D for a lot of my content creation. Believe me when I say they're easy to find.
Welcome back to the last episode of the Atlas Loom, as we are now just pushing away the entirety of our audience.
I'm sorry, audience.
I actually don't know if we should publish that.
Listen, my audience will think it's hilarious.
Okay, fine. Good. Moving forward. Anyway, hey, Diana. After you were done with your bath, take a soak for a little while. You get buried alive. It's fine. And then while you're sitting there under the ground in your coffin with a lot of time on your hands, you're probably coming up with a lot of characters for your world. And for those characters, you're probably coming up with their voices. Do you know anyone who could help us with that?
Not in the slightest at all. I've never heard of a single person who's done a voice for anything ever. Mm. That being said, completely unrelated to this, we brought our friend Seb into the studio today. Oh. How's it going, Seb?
I'm such a big fan. Hi.
All right. So I didn't realize that we were bringing the character voices to the recording. Let me start over. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Atlas Loom.
Wait, that's actually really good.
Well, I'm not going to top that.
Your
lovely co-hosts. I'm a cephalopod.
Where did this come from?
Where did this? This is fantastic.
You do cephalopod voices?
I'm a cephalopod voice now. I've always been a cephalopod, actually.
You didn't notice? As a zoology person.
That makes sense. Explains the beanie.
This is very accurate.
Anyway, voice acting. What's up, Seb? So, Seb, you want to tell the people your handle so that they know what you do?
Yeah, my very self-explanatory handle, how to do voices. You can find me on TikTok and precisely nowhere else. Although I think I own the domain name. And if I don't you dare buy it.
You're going to want to claim those before we put this episode out.
Before you put this out, I'm pretty sure I've got at least one of them.
How to do voik.es is available.
How to do voik. I can't do voiks. I can only do voices.
You've got how to do voices.apartments is available. How to do voices.
I could do with one of those as well.
Dot gay is available. We got it. How to do voices dot discount. Welcome back to the Atlas Loom. We've got some discount voices for you here today.
So my name's Seb and I'm discount Matt Mercer.
Anyway, today's episode is, if you haven't picked up on it already, not really speaking about voice acting in particular, but mostly just how someone, the layman, people who specifically say out on the internet that they can do voices, how people like us can kind of get into performing and acting, playing out the role of a character at the table, whether it's for an AP or just a home game, just the whole performative aspect of it. And this is not your typical episode where someone's going to walk through, the basic 101 levels of voice acting necessarily. We're going to try and break it down and make it easy for you guys. So buckle up. This is something that you will actually be able to take home and use because we're nothing if not functional around here.
Yeah. I'm also excited to dig into all of the different ways to bring that character to life that surround the voice, because we're aware that not everybody is able to or feels comfortable trying out a character voice. And that's perfectly fine and perfectly good. There's no requirement. There is no rule anywhere in any of the player handbooks that require you to do a voice. Yeah. That might not be true. There might be some games that do require you to do a silly little guy voice.
I think there are some, but I always find that like a bit sort of a pointless barrier to put in front of. I'm also realizing I'm shaking my head in agreement with you on a podcast, which is maybe not so. So just reiterate for the
video version.
Yeah, but I listen on Spotify. So
okay, well, I'll,
for future Seb, you agree with Endeavorance's statement.
If it helps, I can put in the captions, I can put Seb is currently nodding yes.
On all the timestamps.
Yeah.
Thank you.
When you reach this point in the episode.
Here's a sheet of paper with all of the timestamps of all the different expressions that Seb made throughout this episode.
good luck. Yeah, I completely agree. And I think a big thing that I really want to try to help dispel just in general with all the stuff I do is the feeling that you need to do incredibly difficult things to do a good character voice. It's, you don't have to do voices at all, but if you would like to have a go at doing them, I think there's a lot that can be done very, very simply that really genuinely everyone is capable of doing. And there are also so many things outside of the voice that you can do to help bring your character to life and just ground them in reality that little bit more as well.
I think before we jump into the actual voice of the thing, maybe we should talk about the more abstract approach of, I've made my character, now what do they sound like? How do you even begin asking that question, or I guess answering that question of, this is a fictional character, possibly a fictional race, possibly in a non-humanoid fictional race. Who knows if they even have a mouth? You know, maybe they speak psychically, and what does that sound like in other people's heads? Like, there's any number of different ways that the communication is being altered from our reality. How do you even begin?
It's a really interesting question, because like, sometimes I will start with the voice itself. So sometimes I just get an idea for a voice I really want to do, and then the character will blossom out of that. But if it is, I think what most people will end up doing is they'll have a character concept, or if they're DMing, they'll have like an NPC they want to do. And I think a big thing to start by looking at are the physical elements. So if you got a really big guy, for example, the chances are that voice is going to go down into a little bit of a lower register, and it doesn't have to be a big shift, but you might just think about dropping it down a little bit, because that's something that would be more expected. I think it's a good idea in general to at least identify what the expectation would be. You're absolutely free to ignore it or subvert it, but knowing what it is, like knowing what the rule is before you choose to break the rule, is quite good. I think for any of those things, I mean, we'll get into, I guess, sort of racial voices for various different fantasy races and things. But there's usually, for me, one of three starting points. Either I'll go very analytical on it, so I'll really break down, this is what I want to do. This person looks like this, they have this sort of structure going on, so I want them to have this sort of attitude, and here are some technical things I could do. Or I'll quite often, especially if it's someone, a voice I'm coming up with quickly, I'll just make a physical shift and then just see where that takes me. So quite simply, like just dropping your bottom lip, and then that starts to alter your voice, and then that can take you in all sorts of different ways, and then which hand you got voice. And so it really does depend on who they are. So it's quite a big question on its own, really.
I think you touched immediately on a thing that is the cheat code that I've been using for faking doing voices. I should be nicer to myself. For doing voices in a way that's not possibly the most professional approach. Do something weird with your mouth. That sounded strange.
Welcome back to the Atlas Loom, a podcast where we teach you how to do weird things with your mouth.
Deverance was the horror DM all along.
Now I'm trying to talk about this thing, and I was about to say, like, I do funny things with my tongue.
Okay.
I stick it, I will.
No, what is that? Tell me exactly what you do with this tongue and where you stick it, Deb. Jesus.
I believe you referred to this as the brute force method when we were talking as well.
Yes. God damn it. Okay, yeah. So I previously met with Seb and am working on some voice stuff for unknown reasons. And the way I described it was that a lot of the voices that I will default to are just me doing some variation of like moving my tongue to a spot in my mouth and holding it there so that I can't speak normally. And I have to then adapt to speaking around this thing, and that produces a voice. So if you like stick your tongue back and try to talk, you're like, hi everybody, how's it going? What are we doing here? Like that kind of thing, where it like basically forces you to just change the way you go about speaking. And I learned very quickly that that's super effective for, one, getting repeatable voices, because it's a very physical thing, and two, it's effective but limiting. And there are better ways to go about getting variety, but if you just need a voice real quick, you can just like bite one side of your tongue and try to talk through that.
It absolutely is a professional approach as well. Like, there's no anything that gets you there. So I think one of the big barriers for people is they feel they need to be able to do all manner of complicated things. And there are more complex elements, but just start with what works for you. And if making a physical shift really does work, great. And then if you add other things in, you can refine it a little bit more. I actually, whenever I'm doing like an audio book where you have to do lots of characters talking to each other, which is quite hard, I will make sure that every single character has a physical thing, even if it's not a mouth shape change or something that would have like a clear explicit impact. But even if it's just a postural shift, because that helps me lock in, right, now it's this person, now it's this person, which is great for TTRPGs, because your players at the table or online with you can then see that you've shifted from one to the other, even if that voice takes a second to lock itself back in.
Like the time that Diana was playing a horse.
God damn it. Yeah. Probably the only thing one of two things I have to contribute to this entire episode is the fact that one time I broke my entire party by portraying a horse by doing a little like head sway back
and
forth.
It was so good.
I'm glad it was good. I was not sober for that because I can't. One of my many mental boundaries I have is that I can't voice act, period, but I definitely can't do it while sober. And one time I was GMing Curse of Strahd and I was role-playing a horse because someone had cast Speak with Animals, and knowing horses and how they don't have vision if you look at the horse, they don't have what's called binocular vision. They can't see straight forward because they're prey animals. They're not predators. The reason we can see straight forward is because it helps us as predators, you know, as humans. Horses have eyes on the sides of their heads. So I was like looking around, like swaying my head back and forth, trying to portray a horse that was like measuring up this person talking to them.
I just want the audience to imagine Diana role playing a horse, just going.
It came from a professional standpoint. Look, it was my fucking degree. All I got to contribute.
But I actually think it's actually a really advanced thing, because there's this school of acting thought, which is animal studies. And I tell you what, I'll give you a really good example of exactly what you've just described. Sir Alec Guinness, who played Obi-Wan in the original Star Wars films, which I'm aware that Diana probably hasn't watched because it's a movie, is he loved using animal studies for things. And I think for Obi-Wan, he used a heron, which is why if you look at most of the conversations he has, he talks to people out of the side of his eye. Because it's a really good way. It doesn't have to, I think people take this very literally sometimes, like I'll do big lizards for like Dragonborn or something. But if you just take on some animal characteristics, if you are someone who understands animals really well and you know what their behaviors look like, you understand it's prey animal, it might behave like this, you can adopt just small elements of those. Because a character who turns his head from side to side while he's speaking to you, even if he's not a horse, is kind of interesting thing on its own. Especially if you had like a slightly dodgy merchant who was doing that all the time. Yeah, absolutely. No. Quality goods, those. Yeah, quality goods. You know, it has that, it brings something to the character straight away. So yeah, 100%. The horses are not just for horses, is what I'm trying to say. Horses can
That's
be for
what
people
we'll name
too.
The episode.
But hay is for horses. Actually am really glad that we've veered towards my next bullet point, if I may, which is that in lieu of having to do voices, or in addition to doing voices, mannerisms. Exactly what Seb was just talking about. Especially love the example of a merchant who's being a bit dodgy. And this dovetails off the same thing you said earlier about like physical changes to your body, like posture or whatnot. Determining what a character would do while they're speaking and how they would communicate non-verbally is as important as how they are communicating verbally. In some cases, your character can't speak and can only communicate non-verbally, and that's important too. But learning what they're doing with their hands, how they are communicating these words, what kind of cadence they're speaking at, or how random their choice of words are, perhaps if they're messing up words consistently, but like sort of within a given pattern of messing up words. There's a lot you can do to differentiate people without even touching the way that you sound, just to change the way that you look and are communicating non-verbally. Maybe you don't make eye contact with a very shy character, or maybe you make way too much eye contact with a very confident character, or a character who's trying to not let someone pay attention to anything else. And so they're just keeping their eye contact. There's any number of things.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right on that. So there's like any kind of physical thing you can do that helps to articulate a character tends to be good. And it will tend to impact the voice unconsciously. Because another thing that's important to remember about like doing character voices is the vast majority of us use our voices every single day, and we can do quite a lot with them. And then it's just when it suddenly becomes a conscious thing that we're trying to activate that it becomes difficult. But if you go through that physical route, you can then, you'll often find you start to change things up anyhow, and that it'll lock you into stuff. And you really can hear those changes in mannerism. But stuff, like you say, stuff like eye contact and things are really good. I like to create little mini games for my characters. This is something I'll almost always do. So it's like a game that I play with myself while I'm role-playing the character. So it can be quite complex. Like I play a really, really confident but really poorly educated goblin. I know, mind-blowingly unique concept. what I play there. But his whole thing is that he will be strong and wrong on words all the time, but he'll just miss. So instead of like patronization, it'll be patriotism. Or something along those lines. But like the game I play with myself is to try to find the most entertaining miss I possibly can. And then that kind of partially keeps me active and keeps me alive. And it's not like you don't want to make it just a bit that you're doing that's just for comedy's sake. But even something as simple as this is a character who holds eye contact a little bit too long is a great one. I'm going to stare directly into my camera and it gets weird real quick.
This is great.
But then innately when you do that, you start, like I find I start to slow down my pace as well. And things start to get creepier across the board, which works quite well for that character.
Another great example of exactly that. And welcome back to the Atlas Loom, a podcast about the Curse of Strahd campaign that Diana is running for us. So we've mentioned Kiki before on this show, and at this point we just need to have them on. Kiki's character in that campaign does this Kiki does this incredibly well, where their character is just very literal and interprets it. The party will be chatting, and or maybe an NPC says something, and they either use a turn of phrase or just the simplest thing that you would never, you know exactly what they meant, but this character doesn't. This character takes it all very literally and inquires within whenever something doesn't make any sense. I can't think of a good one off the top of my head. Something along the lines of like saying we should make like a tree and get out of here. And they'd be like, trees don't move. How would we move if we are a tree? Stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it's the voice is there. The actual like doing a character voice is there. The wit is what carries it, I feel.
Yeah. And I'd call that a character game. Like just something you can play with yourself there, that if you pick that, and it really does, it just enlivens your role play because you're looking out for those moments and it just keeps that focus going and just it helps cement that character in. Augury's a fantastic.
Phenomenal character.
Unbelievably so good. Unbelievably. They're amazing. Kiki's amazing.
Seth, you should probably talk about your qualifications. I realize we just kind of tossed you in here and people in our audience might have absolutely no idea who you are. Do you want to talk to some extent about your background, what you do, why we brought you on here, as opposed to just being our friend?
Yeah, basically, I'm Seb, or How to Do Voices on TikTok, and I'm appearing on this episode because I nagged Diana and Dev to have me on for hours and hours. I'm an actor and a voice actor, principally for the last few years, a voice actor. So I work a lot in a variety of different things, do a lot of audiobooks. I do some game stuff, some things I can talk about, some things I can't. And also trained at drama school for 3 years, where a lot of the acting and vocal techniques that I now teach, that's where I learned those. And then some that I've picked up on the job and a few that I've made up.
So now I'm interested in the few that you've made up.
Yeah.
I'll never reveal.
Oh man.
I need people to believe that they're all ancient. Actually, I'd say the character games thing. That is something, because that's a very TTRPG specifically coded thing that I find really useful.
I think we've been talking about the things that you can do to sort of like skirt around doing a voice or whatever. But I want to also say, before we get into talking about doing voices or even trying or even thinking about that, I have a bullet point here that just says, don't be nervous. And what I mean by that is, a lot of people are going to be really self-conscious about how they sound, or they're going to think that their friends are going to think that they're being silly for trying to do a voice and failing. That's just never been the case. Like, there's just like never, ever, once, ever has someone been like, I don't appreciate this person's trying to lean in to have more fun and make this a more engaging experience for me. Like, if someone's like, haha, DM, your NPC voice is bad, kick them out of the table. Like, screw that guy, right? But the worst that's going to happen is you go to do a character voice, it falls flat, and it's funny for everyone, including you. Like, that's not what I meant to do. But ultimately, do what you're comfortable with, but really consider giving it a shot. Because I would bet for like 90%, 99% of the people listening right now, if you are hesitant because you really think it's not going to work out, ignore that, try it anyway. And if you're the 1%, I'm sorry. I you're just Diana then.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're the 1%, tequila.
alcohol.
The Atlas Loom does not condone anything that Diana Rose says when it comes to consuming alcohol.
If you're of legal drinking age, consuming alcohol can help. Not professionally. I wouldn't do that before a job for the budding voice actors, please. but if you are just doing, yeah, absolutely, because you're exactly right. So much of it is, and understandably, is the nerves. And I think in no small part, it's because a lot of people now coming into D&D or TTRPGs in general, I should say, are coming through watching actual plays, which very often have professional performers on them, and probably most famously, Critical Role with a full table of voice actors. But I think even if you look at, I mean, if you look at the difference between, say, Matt Mercer and Brennan Lee Mulligan, Brennan Lee Mulligan is my personal favorite DM, other than Diana, obviously, my personal favorite DM on the planet. I just think he's amazing. But Matt Mercer is a lot better at voices. But Brennan Lee Mulligan just commits wholeheartedly to the stuff that he's doing. And that's what really works. I think a good safety net to remember is that you can't really get a character voice wrong. Now, you can get it more right, and I hope that I can give you some tips and tricks to help you get it more right, but the only person who has any idea what that character voice was intended to sound like, or what it sounded like in your head, is you. So it's worth just going for it. And the other element is commitment tends to make a better voice. So that's the hard bit. That's the little speed bump with the nerves. If you go a little bit further, a little bit too far, that tends to scan better than going halfway there. And that's when you get those slightly more shaky voices. But any of them, anything is going to be appreciated, and anything, I think, will work. And then you can just work on it and refine it.
I would say that, like, if I can lend a little bit of extra plus one to that, or maybe help make people realize just how prevalent this situation is, I always am like, this is not going to work. This is not going to land. Like, I can't do this voice, or I'm not going to be able to do a voice, and have literally never gotten any pushback. And in fact, get a lot of people being like, oh, that was a great voice. And it's like, I don't agree, but sure. I don't know why you feel that way, but great. And the reality of it is that just often people are surprised that you're even doing it in the first place. And it's just unexpected, because the reality, as Seb was alluding to, is that we're not all playing at a table full of voice actors, and we're not all playing for actual plays. And if you're not a table full of voice actors doing an actual play, it's not important. So doing it is just for fun, and it's just for making everybody's time at the table a little bit better. And so when you go for it and you do commit, it's just, if anything, it's endearing, and it's showing your commitment to the group that you're with. And that's good.
I've done some terrible voices. I just want to make that very clear. I've done some truly.
Can you do
awful...
a terrible voice for us real quick?
Yeah, I did one literally for a professional job the other day, where partway through the sound engineer, the person on the other side of the glass, turned around and was like, you're really regretting that choice, aren't you?
Oh, God.
Because it was a mouse. And I was like, I'd never do anything in like full set. Like, really, I don't tend to do stuff that's really, really high, because there's not much flexibility in there. But I was like, you know what? It's a mouse. Like, it's a kid's book. Let's go for it. And so it was just basically like a full on, it's like, I want to be the person who goes do, 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 do for the king. And that sort of thing, which was fine for a while. But then after, you're kind of flitting back and forth, and it was just, it was grating on me. The author was there. And I was like, I really hope you were very happy so far. I hope you don't mind this one, because I'm not certain on what I've done here. But the thing is, it's committed. And for that particular audience, the reason I stuck with it is that I know that's a kid's book going out to kids. And I know that it will work with that audience. But people are so willing to accept stuff, except really, really, really weird stuff. Go watch like any, I was going to say adult cartoon in the sense of stuff, cartoons made for adults, or whatever your preference is. But you will find weird voices all over the place. Think about the cartoons you watched as a kid and how many of those voices you can, if you really think about them, really do sound like there's a voice of an 11-year-old boy that sounds like a 30-year-old woman who's been smoking for 2.5 decades. But you accept it because it's that character's voice. And so it really is worth committing. And it's if things are genuinely terrible, those are going to be some of your best ever memories and experiences you have around the table. The voice that really, really went haywire, which I've had as well. And I think there's joy in that too. But for the most part, it will just work.
I got an AP coming up where I was like committed to doing a Southern voice. I don't know shit about that. I don't even have been to the South. And so my GM came up and they were like, hey, so what part of the South are you from? And I'm like, the lower states. And she's like, okay, but like where though? And I'm like, the Southern part of the United States. There's no place that I can pin it to because it's not real. Doesn't matter.
The technical term for that is like a general southern. So whatever you've got, like I'm broadly going in this area, but I don't know exactly where, you just go gen. So like general American is that accent that you hear every British actor do when they're doing American.
Really?
Yeah. Gen North is sort of the Sean Bean, like, hey, you know, that sort of, I'm from the North, but I'm not specifically pinning myself down to anywhere.
I like Gen North. I'm here for that.
Gen North is pretty good. But yeah, it tends to locate itself somewhere. But I'd say that's absolutely valid to do. It's also a fantasy world, unless it's set in a particular place. There's no need to get the accent perfectly right, is there?
And even then, there's always an excuse for it. Like our friend Hannah does D&D, or Hannah plays D&D, I believe it is, she was born in Scotland, right? But then moved over to America or some such very early on. And
I think other way around.
Is it? Born in America, went to Scotland? Regardless, like she spent a good amount of her life in America, and you can tell that she has a mostly American accent, but very specific syllables. She slips into Scottish and it's like back in and back out again. You wouldn't even notice it unless you were listening to it back on a recording. And it's like pretty much any combination of random bullshit that you come up with is valid, because I guarantee it actually exists somewhere if you need that validation. But you shouldn't need that validation, you know?
No, pretty much everyone speaks with what's called an idiolect, which is an accent that's unique to you, or a voice that's unique to you. And there are some very clear ones, like Christopher Walken, the now dead queen, people like that, John Malkovich. Those sorts of people where you can pin it down to them, but pretty much no one has a perfect accent representative of where they're from. So absolutely get that. I actually think you make an accent more accurate if you get it just slightly wrong. It sounds better
more than natural.
If you do it. Yeah, it sounds more natural than if you do it pitch perfectly.
Since we haven't yet gotten to the how to actually be good at doing voices thing, I do want to spend just a smidge more time on how to be bad at doing voices. And what you can do with bad voices. Because having a voice that doesn't land, or a character with a voice that's just like, oh no, oh, what am I doing here? Depending on the vibe of the campaign, you can use that voice to set the scene. If it's a recurring NPC, for example, who your party is just like, oh no, not this person again. And like, you know, they enter a bar, they're like at a tavern or whatever, and from across the tavern, they hear a very distinct voice calling them out. And it's, you know, so-and-so. But without even having to introduce the character, you've already established this voice as like maybe it's grating, maybe it's just like terrible, or maybe they have exactly one volume and it's too loud. And this person is just calling to you from across the bar. And before they even turn and look, Like, you've already got one of your players just head desking, just not happy. And you've then taken this character, this voice that's in, that's maybe by accident, maybe on purpose, grating and terrible, and you've turned it into a sort of social dynamic.
Yeah, and that can be some of the most fun. I had a recurring character who was a gray slard called Slath. And he would just constantly try to assassinate the party. So about every 4 or 5 sessions, in some obscure way, he would attempt a very ineffectual assassination. But he was just really, really, really incompetent. But it was the voice, because there was a little announcement of him. He would always be disguised in some sort of illusion. Lemony Snicket, a series of unfortunate events. So he would always be disguised in some sort of thing, and then eventually would unveil himself and go, "It is I, Slath!" And that would just sort of go, okay, and now we're going to do the fight, which will always burn out really quickly because he's way weaker than us and has been for ages. And then it's just a nice little touchstone that works really well for your players. And again, it was really useful when we got into really dark territory in the campaign. And we needed a bit of levity. He was someone I could bring in that would just be, it's like a little solace for your players, because there's like, right, this is a comfortable thing that we know. We know what's going to go on here. We're going to have a bit of lightness, and then we can kind of go back to our horrible trauma, which is a really useful thing for making sure that your whole campaign doesn't sink into that mire of despair.
Welcome back to the Mire of Despair, a podcast about voice acting. I was born in the Mire of Despair. Yeah, I had a similar character in a campaign that was a like boastful adventurer who was not actually good at anything, but he was sort of like always there. Like, he always ended up being wherever the party was. He always also caught wind of the same quest hook, and he was like, "I'm here to save the day," like that kind of a character. And so like when they heard this big booming voice, they're approaching the place that they're supposed to be, and they would hear in the distance this big booming voice talking to somebody. And they're just like, "Fuck this guy." Or they would like actually change course and start being like, "Okay, well, we don't want him to see us because we don't need him. So we're going to start stealthing now, or we're going to like go do something to cause a distraction and get him out of the situation before we roll up." So it's a good way to play with the senses and impose a sense of, "Oh God, oh fuck, not this guy."
I will also say, from a DM perspective, and especially from a perspective of someone who is in their very, very much in their own head about voices and things like that, if you feel as though you can't do a specific voice to introduce a character or make a character known that they're in the scene before revealing their physical presence, a lot of DMs I know use music for that sort of thing. So like every time the BBEG is in a room, they slowly start to dial up like the BBEG's theme song, mm-hmm. So again, the point of this episode is to make you feel more confident about voice acting or portraying characters in ways through their voice and their physicality and things like that. If for some reason you come out of this episode and you're like, "Fuck, I still can't do that," use that as a backup. Try and use actual like played music instead as a sort of interim thing until you rewatch this episode 3 or 4 times and finally get the courage to give it a shot.
Yeah. And also like on that subject, it's a slow process. Like, jokes aside on it, you're probably not, if you're someone who really, really struggles doing voices from the confidence perspective, it will come with time. Don't expect yourself to listen to an hour and a half episode and then immediately be able to leap in and do fantastic voices and really go for it. It might be that you really think you will, and then in the moment you find it a little bit hard, and that's all right. And then eventually you'll find yourself working up to do 1 or 2, and then it will start to build and build and build. But give yourself that time for it to grow, because Rome wasn't built in a day. It does take time. I'm really, really bad psychologically for like not being able to do things. If I can't do something, I tend to want to abandon it altogether. And I really had to conquer that when I was younger, because it just meant I just stopped any activity I wasn't immediately good at. And I do, allowing yourself the ability to be a bit shit is just a great way to get better at something. And it is easier said than done. I do really respect that, but don't beat yourself up if you're not immediately leaping in and doing all sorts of quite crazy, wacky stuff with your voice.
There's also the reality that the only way you'll get better is to try. And the easiest and safest way to try is to just be in a room by yourself and do voices.
Doing the shower. Oh, yeah.
It's weird. It's weird. I will say it's weird. I, as a person whose literal job is to be in a room by myself and talk, for whatever reason, when I'm in a room by myself and I talk funny, it's weird. And it's taken real efforts to kind of get used to that. But that's the only way that you can practice, is to practice.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit during the episode with Gina, but in the car, in the shower, 100%.
Shower's doubly good for your voice because the steam is really good for your vocal folds. So it'll actually make your voices better as well.
I
highly recommend practicing voices in the shower.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, there you go. There's a little technical tip for you. And also because we've got like a, sorry, this is too much information for you. We've got a bit of a mold issue in our place.
Oh no.
So when we shower, we have to have like the windows open as well. So not wide enough that anyone can see, as exciting as that would be for our neighbors. But just enough that like to let some of the steam out. And I really do worry what my neighbors think about me, because whenever I'm on a job, which is relatively often, I warm up in the shower and then practice my voices in the shower. And I voice a surprising number of like quite young children. But they're often talking to adults and things, so I'll practice those conversations. So I'll be in the shower just going, we'll do it all that. And then you're just here like, thank you for listening. And all that kind of
stuff. Oh my God. So before we get into the specifics of how to tune a voice just like at the micro level, on the macro level, especially if you are DMing and you're just reaching for a whole bunch of different voices very frequently and you're jumping between NPCs or you're doing whatever, it helps, and we said this a bit at the outset, it helps to sort of just figure out where you will generally be for various archetypes of character. Your big, deep voice, your soft, timid voice, your discerning, stern voice. There's like a handful of categories, like not that many, that you're going to find yourself naturally going to. And depending on what your campaign is, you'll be leaning on some more than others, and you'll know better than I would exactly what like top three you need. But you can really, one, just stick with that. Just my big booming voice is just me doing like this. This is barely me doing anything. And then like my stern voice is just like, stop it. You knock it off. Like, right? Like I've barely changed anything. And like, that's fine. That's as far as you got to go. And then you can just tweak it a little bit based on if it's a different type of character, or maybe they're a halfling, so they're a bit more like higher pitched or nasally or something. But really, you just start by going right to the big buckets, having those easy voices on hand, and move as needed from there. So I will typically have, I've got listed here, big, small, gruff, soft, stern, timid. Like, those are more or less the six that I tend to lean on. And then my seventh is Drunk Southern Guy, which is every other NPC in all of my campaigns.
Yeah, mine's the gruff Cockney. Everyone's got their sort of really, I'm put on the spot, I don't know what to say. This is someone throwing in a line to someone else's scene. They've got their voice they go to. Mine's the gruff Cockney. Now, I will say, on those two voices where you said I'm not doing much here, you actually did quite a lot. So, but this is, which is very much my point when I say,
do you see
people,
what I mean? When I said that, when I barely tried to do anything, people are like, wow, you did great.
But it is, this also, what I mean is that you are doing way more, people are way more competent with their voices than they think they are, in terms of, it's just a lack of maybe knowledge or specific understanding as to what exactly you're doing. So for example, for that big booming voice, you also dropped your pitch slightly, dropped your placement back, and then we did the big booming voice. And raising
and
volumes
I did,
very...
I did the posture. I didn't intend to. I just did the posture.
And you know, you spread your arms because that creates, you get a lot of your voice from your chest, so that creates a bigger drum, basically. That is a good way of doing. Go look at an opera singer. Should we discuss, I can't remember if it was in the bonus episode or not.
But check out like our bonus episode, opera, by the way.
Go become a gilded world weaver.
Oh my God, you knew the line.
Hey.
Oh
shit.
Yeah.
I'm a fan. Am I a
Hey, Seb, where do you
people?
Think people can find merch for the Atlas Loom?
They can find it at endeavorance.store.camp. .merch.camp? Merch.endeavorance.camp. Campendeavorance.merch. Merchendeavorance.camp. Endeavorinscamp.merch.
Homestarrunner.net. It's .com. Shop.endeavorance.camp.
You were very close. I was close. You would have gone there eventually.
Shop.endeavorance.
I'm just going to go make all of the websites that you just made.
Yeah, now we have to claim every single one of those. Thanks, Jim.
No, I'll tell you what's
wrong. Blowing up our budget for the year.
Yeah. I went store because you're American. I would say shop. I thought Americans would say store.
We say store, but like shop is like, it's context dependent.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
But yeah.
I guess I would say merch store. Mm-hmm. But merch shop works too. This is important.
This is very important.
So voices.
To return to my point, opera singers will sort of do that big open chest thing because they get more resonance out of it. But also then your other voice, like your very stern thing, you're doing something very interesting there, which is going way, way more staccato in the rhythm. Which is, again, it's a little shift that you're not consciously doing it, but you are changing these things. And we do all have access to them because we use them in day-to-day life. And a little bit of knowledge can go a long way to helping with those things. So if I can just pivot into the sort of what I would put as like the three big things to learn if you want to be able to do voices. And they are all really simple.
Hold on, I need a notebook to write this down.
Yeah, you don't need to be... class, grab your notebooks.
So Seth, where can people get this notebook?
They can get that notebook at shop.endeavorance.camp. Yeah?
Incredible. What, Diana, I think we're good. We can just have him take care of the rest of the episode.
Yeah,
I'll get the beanie.
We can skedaddle, all right, bye. Honestly.
All right.
This is great.
Hello. You can get this at
shop.endeavorance.camp,
where we have all sorts of merch. I've got a
very
dog,
clearly not needed.
Flynn.
Goodbye.
This is fantastic.
Three big things, which are there are lots of different things you can change in your voice. Some of them I would consider levers, which means that there's multiple things you can do with it. It kind of exists on a spectrum from one side to another. Some of them I'd consider qualities, which would be more on-off elements. Mostly you want to concern yourself with the levers, but the three big ones for that for me would be pitch, pace, and rhythm. And as I say, these are things that we use all the time. So pitch, very simply, how high or how low your voice goes. You do not have to be able to do anything extreme to do good voices within this. There are real extremes, but for 90% of your characters, you don't want to be anyway, as I demonstrated earlier with the mouse voice. You don't want most of your characters to be up here. you'll get tired. And you don't have to go all the way down to the bottom either. So there's like big extremes. But just lifting your pitch a little bit and changing absolutely nothing else gives a really different effect. So have a little experiment with that pitch. And I would also consider putting this on like a number scale, particularly if you're someone who likes to be a little more literal, a little more analytical with things, which is true of me. I like to basically...
Couldn't be the everybody in this call right now.
Definitely not. I put it on a scale of 1 to 5. So wherever your natural voice sits is a 3. You don't need to think about where the world sits as like what the middle range is. What your natural voice is the 3. That's the midpoint. Work with what you've got. Because another little side point that's really important, when you're doing multiple character voices, all anyone's going to think about is how it relates to your voice. They're not going to think, well, that wasn't quite as deep as James Earl Jones. They're just going to be thinking, that's Darth Vader in Star Wars, Diana.
Thanks.
You're welcome. they're just going to be thinking, oh, that was a deep voice for Endeavorance. That was a deep voice for Diana. So 3 is where your voice naturally sits. 1 would be right as far down as you could go, and 5 would be as high as you can go, and then 2 and 3 would be the midpoint between those, which is a good place to start. And once you feel you've got comfortable with those, expand it up to a range of 10 points. I don't really think you need any more than 10. I think things start getting confusing after that, but you might then find, right, that I'm just going to go just above what my natural pitch is, or I'm going to go quite a long way above. And it's those little shifts that can really help to define the characters. Pace is the speed at which you speak. Now, because we're going to find a little bit of crossover with rhythm, I tend to think of pace as how quickly you will get through a sentence. And again, there's a nice subtle thing to change, because you don't have to be able to do anything more complex than slowing down how quickly you're speaking. You want to play a character that's boring? Just make them really, really slow. Great NPCs from that. The person who's got important information who won't get to the information till the end of the sentence. They're like, they've just run through here. Where did they go? Oh, yes. They were just running over.
I used to run
that
frequently.
Exactly, yeah.
When I was younger. I once had a very important, lots of sloth NPCs on this episode, but I had a massive sloth that talked excruciatingly slowly. And watching my players be actively frustrated, hysterical.
Yeah. That's all we ever want, frustrating our players. And then, of course, the reverse is quite true. Speaking more quickly can be trickier, because obviously you've got to come up with what you're going to say that much more quickly, but you really don't have to change anything else. You've really got a different character there, because they are getting to the end of their sentence really, really quickly, and they may be moving from one to the other really, really quick, and then that gives them a very different dynamic. That's a really extreme version. Those are both real extremes, but subtle shifts, just going a little bit more quickly than maybe you would normally go, can give you quite a different dynamic. And then the last thing in that trio, that sort of holy trinity, would be rhythm. So I use the musical terms legato and staccato. And basically legato, this is more about the syllables themselves. So in more legato rhythm, the syllables are more stretched out. So Astarion in Baldur's Gate has that, oh, darling. You know, he really leans into each syllable. And then a more staccato rhythm would get through each syllable that much more quickly. It would be more clipped. Now, obviously, it's easier to pair staccato and higher pace, but you don't have to. You can be very slow. Your Stern character earlier was a good example of someone who's actually quite slow, but also staccato. And that works really well as a character. Exactly, and it comes across as very pointed. Or you can be a little quicker and legato as well. So if you put pace on that scale of 1 to 5, and then when you get more advanced, 1 to 10, pitch on that scale, and think about those rhythmic elements, those are all things that shouldn't be that hard in isolation to change. Here's a really important thing I'd like everyone to remember, which is you do not have to engage every possible tool in your toolbox for every voice. And I think that's a big limiting factor for people. They feel I need to think, I've got to do something crazy with the pitch and the pacing and the rhythm, and they've got to have this wild thing and constriction and breathiness and all this stuff. You can get a character out of a pitch shift, and that's it.
Yep.
But once you start combining these elements, if you've got five options for pitch and five options for pace, that's, I don't know how to do the maths. 5 to the power of 5 voices, 3,125 voices. So that's how many voices you get out of just those two elements, shifting them around. Some of them are going to be more similar than others. And then you add the legato staccato side into it as well. And then you can think about how much variety within it there is. And so with just those three things, you are going to go into tens of thousands of potential voices before having to do anything taxing. It might not necessarily be that you can immediately switch all that on and do it, but that you don't need to be able to do any sort of wild gymnastics vocally to be able to create a whole range of dynamic and interesting voices.
I like what you said about not really needing to make a big change for, most voices. And in fact, if you are, especially if you're playing as a DM and again, you're voicing a whole bunch of NPCs, you're probably ad-libbing a bunch of NPCs. You genuinely do not need to even come up with a voice for half of them. Or yes, something as simple as just a, like, I'm talking, it's just, to steal one of my favorite phrases from Diana, is just you in a different font. And like, yeah. It's perfectly okay with, if your world, if the majority of NPCs in your world are you in a different font. Because that's fine. Especially if they are a random ad-libbed NPC, they're just a filler, a person that they stopped on the street, doesn't need a voice. Can just be like, hey, what's up? That's arguably my voice on a day where I've got a little bit of a raspy voice. And that's it. And like, I already forgot. Couldn't do it again. Doesn't matter. Like, it can be just one of the voices that you normally use in your life, which you have a lot of, and you might not even know. You probably have your, like, ordering food from a waiter voice, or your talking to kids voice.
The customer service voice.
The customer service voice. You're answering a telephone voice. Like you've got a lot of voices that you might not even realize you have already, and you can just let that drive things.
Mm.
Anyway, let's go back to talking about how to do really cool voices by trying hard.
But I do, and to go with that as well, I also think it's important to remember that, like, the smaller the character, the bigger the weight of voice they can take. So if you are going to do your really wild big voices, maybe you've talked about him in a previous episode, the Matt Musk, I think it's the gunpowder salesman, right? Mm. Great character, great voice, only works because, and Matt Mercer is smart. I nearly called him Matt there. We're on first name terms. Matt is smart enough to know that he can go that big and that wild and that silly with it because that character's not going to be around that much. That would be exhausting if that character was permanently there. The joke would run thin really quick. So those, even if you've got a more significant NPC and you want to use something that's pretty similar to yourself, you in a different font, which is a great phrase, and I think I'm also going to steal.
Go for it.
Great. That works really well for those larger NPCs because they need to be that touch more contained, usually, with a handful of exceptions.
Characters that are utility focused, your shopkeepers, your tavern owners, or whatever, you don't want them to have to take effort. You just don't. if you're discussing fantasy logistics, reach for a simple voice.
Yeah. And also, if you've got stuff, a great way into it, particularly for NPCs like shopkeepers, is there's this idea of professional deformation. So, like, your job affecting how you are physically and also how you speak. You are both pretty prolific streamers.
We've also been defamed plenty of times.
Yeah, I was gonna say when you said professional defamation, I was like, is that just when I'm making fun of Diana? And
that's when,
like,
we release the uncut versions of the Atlas Loom.
Yeah. Oh no. God! Talk
no,
about getting canceled.
That. Yeah, professional deformation. Yeah.
All right. Sure. Sure.
I've not got a rhotic accent. Deformation. Is basically the idea of that job affecting how you speak, how you conduct yourself. If the NPC is a librarian, you can convey that sense pretty easily by just making them a bit quieter. Whereas if they are a market salesman, the reverse. You know, they might be that much more likely to want to push their voice out because they're constantly trying to hawk in customers and the like. So that's, again, just a simple shift of, we're talking about entry points for characters earlier. If there's an NPC and it's definitely not one you want to put the weight of work into planning because it's a fucking shopkeeper, then just think about that. What do they sell? And therefore, how do they behave?
I mean, the only reason that I have, and I've said this several times before, I have three voices, and one of them is a nobility type voice. And most of that work doesn't come from anything that I do as far as accents or anything like that. I take a lot of what Seb said when it comes to pacing and being able to speak with long gaps in between words and whatnot. But also it comes from her vocabulary. She is noble. She has an education, so she doesn't use connecting words like or anything like that. Like, when she thinks about what she's trying to say, she doesn't try and fill the silence because she doesn't need to make herself feel important. She knows she is important. So kind of thinking about, and in terms of people like me who like to put numbers to things, thinking about when you're a player, your statistics, you know, if you have really high wisdom or really high charisma, try and think about how that would affect the vocabulary that you use with your character. And that takes a little bit more work on the thinking side of things, but I'm a thinking person. That's what I do. So that might be able to be helpful to some of you guys. I don't know.
I think often also an important thing to remember is that charisma can you can almost view it as the ability to play the room correctly. And that doesn't have to just mean being more eloquent. There's this acting idea of spell, which is essentially that, the idea of you want someone's facility to exert influence over a room. So really famous examples of people with like high levels of spell would be like Marilyn Monroe. Rock stars tend to have high levels of spell. But the other people who have really high levels of spell, maybe less so for you two, babies. Put a baby...
Wow!
Put a bit. Well, no, just because you've spoken very explicitly.
I was so offended for like a second, and then you finished the thought. No, I was no longer offended.
But babies, you put a baby in a room, and like the room starts to gravitate around it. Yeah, unless again, leave it on a mountainside like it's a Greek tragedy, and then it grows up and kills you, takes your throne, sleeps with your ex-wife, who's actually its mother, discovers this, she goes off and blinds herself. There's a Sphinx in there somewhere. You can play the idea of spell from a lower status perspective as well. So it doesn't just have to be your ability to be really eloquent, because I know some people really struggle with that, the idea of picking out the right words. Or you can play someone who's a bit more of a Jack the Lad, kind of a bit more of a... trying to not use too many Britishisms in one sentence.
I was about to say a bit more of a geezer.
Sure.
A bit more of a geezer. But that kind of person who can be, you know, actually play it down quite a lot, not necessarily using all sorts of complicated, like high fancy words or anything, but can come across as really charismatic because they know how to play that room specifically. And also worth never forgetting that your social stats exist for a reason. And that you shouldn't feel compelled to be able to meet your 20 in charisma. Like, there's a reason you can roll for stuff in D&D. I used to do a lot of LARP, and LARP has very much the reverse thing, where you have abilities to compensate for the physical things you cannot do, because I am not a grizzled veteran of 1,000 campaigns. I was at the time a pretty tiny, squeaky man from London. Boy, from London.
We're pretty far from the topic at this point, but I'll do the tangent anyway, because the only thing that I'm hesitant about this tangent is that it's going to consume, or maybe lay up, one of Diana's notes. You talked about having a character that's informed by their profession. The example you gave was a librarian who would speak in hushed tones. This is the worst possible game to pick as an example for voice acting. In Skyrim...
Could have picked Oblivion.
Oblivion is definitely worse. You're correct. In Skyrim,
I've got to be so careful. This is very much studios where I work.
Okay, backing up.
No, it's so good.
So all the people who voice acted in Skyrim are wonderful and lovely. Please hire Seb. Also,
I didn't work on Skyrim, by the way. Hey, Todd,
don't torch.
You can do Skyrim like. On the 15th year anniversary remake or some such, because I'm sure there'll be one.
Jesus Christ. Anyway, in Skyrim, in the Mages College, their librarian is an orc.
Oh.
And the reason that I bring up, you know, Skyrim and voices, Skyrim, obviously, if you somehow haven't played, Skyrim is infamous for essentially having like 8 voice actors for like thousands of characters. And so you go to a given city, you walk past 2 dudes, and they both start talking at you in the same voice. And, you know, by necessity, these voice actors have probably no idea what the character is they're voicing. They're just churning out thousands and thousands of lines. And the guy in the library is an orc. And they basically just have their guy that voices all of the orcs voicing this guy. And maybe it was a character decision. Maybe it was a logistics decision. But you go into the library and this guy's like, "Welcome to the library. Don't fuck with my books or I'm going to kill you." And you're just like, okay, guy that's screaming at me with your loud, booming orc voice in this here library, sure. And that actually makes that character stick out in my head. Like, I can't think of a ton of random NPCs in Skyrim, but I can think of that guy because it's like, why is this librarian so loud? What is going on here? And that brings up the subvert expectations. You got a silly little guy, maybe he's got a deep voice, you know? That kind of stuff.
So very brief tangent, just a quick defense.
Are you tangenting off my tangent?
I'm going to tangent off your tangent.
Love it.
If we get 2 more tangents, we'll be back on track.
Yeah.
I just a quick defense of, like, if you've ever played a game and you're like, these, why do these voices sound so disjointed or so weird, or like they didn't know what they're talking about or who the character was, they probably didn't. You are, like, voicing NPCs in games is wild, and you have extraordinarily little context of things, and they zip by doing it. So
plus dialogue trees.
Dialogue trees, that's a whole different thing. But dialogue trees, they're also wild. But just if you ever are like, God, that voice sounds like just not that dissimilar to that one, or a weird voice for this character, just remember they probably didn't see a single asset because they didn't exist at that point, or really have any context beyond a rough description of who the character was, maybe. And then that might have changed down the line as well. So just a quick defense of the very talented people.
I want to be super, super clear. That is not a critique of the voice actor. That is a critique of Todd Howard, if anything. It is not a critique of the voice actor.
Now I just want a podcast that's like Seb revealing all these secrets within the industry.
Yes, I'd like that too. If anyone wants to listen to that, I will start a Patreon and will fund me getting a less overexposed camera. Breaking stereotypes. Back to the point about breaking stereotypes. I think that's really important. So when I mentioned earlier, do the expected first in your mind when you're practicing things, because it's good to know what the expectation is, because then you can subvert in a more accurate or useful way. So I was running a game for a group where in the previous campaign, it was a very clear sort of good and evil, angel's good, devil's bad type deal. Great campaign. Like, I've got a phenomenal DM. And one of the players, that was their first ever campaign they played in. So then they were coming into a game that I was running, which was set in like a magical university. And I needed them to very quickly understand that the rules of the game were different here, and that it wasn't just like evil dude evil, good dude good. So early on, I introduced them to a devil and then just gave them the most normal. It was just a devil called Susan. And they just had the most normal voice I could possibly give them. So everyone else, I do tend to do quite wacky voices because I enjoy it. But then they just talk to Susan. She'd be like, oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. No, I'm just going to go back to my studies. Yeah. All right. Okay, bye. You know, it's that kind of thing. Because breaking that stereotype also served to establish the world, that we are not in the world of everyone is afraid of devils and devils are universally bad. With the exception of, I guess, being manifestations of evil within that particular D&D universe. But
there's that sticky wicket. But
you say manifestation of evil, I say Conservative Party. It's
happy election year, everyone.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Atlas Loom. We're trying to weave a new world for all of us to escape to.
Yes. Oh, please. Please.
So voices.
Getting into more technical elements. So to go right back to what you asked at the beginning, which is like coming up with a voice right at the outset. Generally, what I will look to do is what I think the attitude of that character is, what kind of physical elements will play a role in it, and then also what speaks to the personality that I want them to have, or the things that are underlying it. So I very much approach it in the same way you would think about doing something like backstory, or if you're trying to find, you mentioned a lot, trying to find music, I'll often try and find music, and that will help me inform a voice as well, because I've got a sense, oh, there's this sort of melody behind it as well. And then I'll just start playing around with stuff. Usually for TTRPGs, I'll go physical first. And even if that's a gestural physical thing, I don't know why. Recently, I've just really wanted to do a sort of film noir detective character really badly. And it's a voice I can only do if I mime smoking a cigarette. Even talking about it, my hand is formed into the position.
I can tell, I was like,
I'm just holding two fingers together. But he's got that kind of like, yeah, this city, I love her, I hate her in equal measure. You know, that kind of just like grainy, gravelly voice. And
in that voice, can you say legs that go all the way down to the floor?
Yeah, she got legs that go all the way down to the floor and all the way up to her hips. They got knees in the middle. I vampire lover. So I think like a little physical thing can really help. And I do think for TTRPGs helps you lock in a lot as well. But I'll also, what I will tend to do is get the broad strokes of a voice. I'll have a rough idea and I'll accept to myself that it won't be exactly what I'm looking for right off the bat. So I'll pitch somewhere that feels vaguely right. And then I start messing around with those levers and qualities and start to think, oh, what if I threw that in there as well? So right, they're high pitch. Maybe they're a little bit too high pitch. I need to bring them down a little bit. What if they started over their words, their pace went a little bit quicker. And all of a sudden that character might start to appear. And then I'll start to think about what I would call pre-life as well, which is a little noise, a little pause sound. You okay there, Diana? Pre-life.
Yeah, I just remember this from your lesson.
Oh, okay. Yeah. God, I just did a Diana noise. That was, so pre-life is a little noise, a little gestural sound almost. So it could be a pause sound or something that launches you into a voice. It's a great way of locking back into a character, but it also really helps to make them more real. So I'm trying to think of a good example. So often I'll do my go-to ogre voice, which has this sort of, on it. So whenever he's taking a pause, he, I guess that's what I'm doing. We could go into the cave or, counterpoint, pub. You know, it's that kind of, he's got that pause sound and that's what helps me lock into the voice that little bit more, that sound. And it can be anything. It can be a simple little breath that they have. Maybe just before they start speaking, they have a little, oh yes, I've got a great idea. Oh, wait, maybe we could do this. And then that gives you a lot for a character almost immediately on its own as well. So I think it's a good idea just to go broad early on and then work out how to refine it a little bit. Is the voice you're doing selling the idea that you want? And then if not, what little subtle changes can be made, little tweaks? Think about those pitch, pace, and rhythm elements. Do you want to make the character a touch more breathy or a little more constricted in the throat? Do you want to add that little bit of gravel that you sometimes have or something along those lines? Do you want to find more variation in their rhythm? Or are they someone who has, you talked about a noble character earlier, someone who's very reserved, will tend to be a little more consistent in rhythm because they are that much harder to knock off their balance. Whereas someone who's not very reserved might go from very, very quick to a lot slower quite quickly, and it can convey quite a different sense in a subtle little way. So those would be my elements for getting that voice together initially. And then what I do is I'll record myself doing the voice, and then I don't listen back to it, ideally for a couple of days.
Really?
But yes, because you will have an idea of what you want the voice to sound like, and it won't sound like that. And that is just a purely scientific thing of our voice sounds different in our heads to how it sounds once it's been transmitted through the air. Due to
goddamn air.
Goddamn air.
If we could just solve that problem.
Just get rid of air. That's the campaign slogan I'm riding on. No more air.
Yeah, I was gonna say we're bringing this back around to the Conservative Party somehow.
No doubt they'll be making cuts there soon. But basically, air conducts lower frequencies less well than your bone does. So that's why your voice tends to sound nicer in your own head than when you listen back on a recording. The reason I give it a couple of days is just so what I'm looking for is, does that voice sell the idea of the character that I want it to sell? As opposed to, does it sound absolutely pitch perfectly as I was hoping it would sound? Because it rarely, if ever, does. And you can get yourself tangled up in knots doing that. By giving yourself a bit of distance, you can get out of your own head. Even if you just leave it a couple of hours, you can get out of your own head of how you wanted it to sound or how you thought it sounded. And instead look at it more objectively of, does that sound like the goblin I wanted it to sound like? Or does it not? And if not, what little shifts can we make?
I will say, and I'm going to jump in here for a sec, because especially after you talked about pre-lives, I know for a fact there are people like ready to slam on their keyboard talking about trigger senses right now. And I remember you saying something about that when you were talking to me about voice acting a long time ago.
Hmm. So people predominantly that I've seen use trigger sentences for accents, which I think is really useful, and I definitely do. The idea of a trigger sentence is basically a sentence to get you into the voice. Pre-life is a very similar thing, but you can do it without needing to break the narrative flow. So it's like it's a subtler version. So I have a character I do for the Beano, which is, I don't need to tell you what the Beano is. If you're British, you know it. If you're not, you won't. I do a character for the Beano who has quite a tricky voice, but I've got kind of an easy ride with it because every time he speaks, he launches in by going, "No," which is something I added. "No, I'm telling my father." And he's got that kind of vibe going on. Rather than needing to say a full sentence there, I get myself into the voice with the noise, but then the noise actually becomes part of the sentence. Now, trigger sentences are really useful, especially if you're going to stick in a voice for a while and you don't need to worry about it. But if you're doing something like dropping between your own voice to describe what's going on and then the characters or multiple different characters, pre-life is like a slightly more advanced version of the same thing and is worth learning and worth practicing.
We've talked about some of the basics of control of the voice. We've talked about using mannerisms, using vocabulary, using your just posture, all sorts of different ways that you can alter the stage presence of your character, so to speak. Seb, do you have any additional things that you think are critically important for us to touch on in this year first of what will probably be several episodes about voicing characters?
I think a lot of people get caught up in equating voices with accents, and accents are an element that you can put into a voice, but mm-hmm. you do not have to be able to do an accent, any accent, to be able to do a shit ton of voices. They are a useful thing to learn, but first of all, I divorce one from the other. When it comes to looking at accents themselves, if you do want to get better at them, because I know a lot of people struggle, one of the key things that people don't tend to look at is what you call prosody. So accents have sounds, so the consonant sounds, the vowel sounds, but they also have something called prosody, which encompasses things like rhythm, pitch range, pacing, and placement. So what you talked about earlier with moving your mouth around a little bit, different accents will tend to have different mouth shapes. One of the hard parts for like a Brit, well, I can't say broadly Brit there, for someone with my accent, which is sort of southeastern English sounding accent.
I mean, there's not that many accents in the UK.
The highest density to landmass in the world. There's like 8 accents in London. So I have like sort of middle-class southeastern English accent, which is a very, very lazy accent. It's very to the back of the mouth. So what's really hard for me is doing pretty much any kind of American accent that's very rhotic, because it tends to be very forward. And you tend to basically, as you mentioned earlier, you're working out your tongues a heck of a lot more than we happen to be over here. But genuinely, you are.
Damn. Hey, woo.
They may be less flexible.
UK folk, I'm very sorry.
Oh, less
flexible. Less flexible, okay. But more sturdy. So depending on what you like.
That's how we
That was my guess. That was on my Tinder bio for like 3 years.
So it's worth having a look into a prosody, the prosody of an accent. So what's their placement? A very common mistake Americans will tend to do when they're doing my accent, which is what will usually be referred to as a British accent, is they will emphasize in the wrong way. So it's 3 different kinds of emphasizing. You can emphasize with pitch, you can emphasize with power, or you can emphasize with length. So most American accents, most American accents punch things out a little bit harder. If you're going to emphasize a word, you will tend to use power. Whereas most British accents, we use pitch. If we want to highlight a word, we don't necessarily go any harder on the word. We just lift it. If you do a southeastern English accent, RP accent, with power emphasis, you end up sounding like Hermione Granger, which is why two British people, so many Americans doing British accents sound exactly like Hermione. Because it's like, or worse, expelled. It's punching out the words. So if you want to get really accurate sounding, that's a useful thing. Accents are probably a whole different topic in of themselves because they don't quite follow that same rule of you can't get it wrong. I would personally just not get too caught up in them and remember that pretty much no one has a perfectly reflective accent of where they're from. So making a character, really going for a character with all their little weird idiosyncrasies in the voice. If you're doing your southern that you mentioned earlier, and there's some things that are inaccurate, in inverted commas, they're just a little characteristic of that person's voice, which people do have. So don't be afraid of accents. The only thing I would say when it comes to building a voice, I wouldn't go accent first, because then it gets really hard to maneuver, because you tend to have a sense of how that accent sounds. And if you start with it and then try and layer other stuff in, it's much harder to shift. Whereas if you go, right, I'm dropping my pitch, I'm putting some gravel in, and then I'm going to be Scottish, then it's a lot easier for me to put that on top because I've established the voice already, as opposed to the other way around.
I want to also hammer home that you don't need to avoid certain types of characters because you're afraid of the accent that usually comes along with them. You do not need to do stereotypical accents. You do not need to do a Scottish accent for a dwarf. You do not need to do a like yo-ho pirate accent just because they are yo-ho pirates. Like, it's okay to do whatever voice for whatever character.
Yeah, that's actually a personal bugbear of mine, which is having everyone of a given race with the same accent, which just, if you're talking about, to bring it back to the topic of the whole podcast, world weaving, for me, that doesn't build a very believable world. Because then
he can shill our merch. He can talk about the subject of our podcast. We don't need...
I'll
take
a fucking
vacation.
Outro if you want.
Great.
Really?
Excellent.
I think.
Oh, I'm going to hold you to that.
Dana, she's going to hold you to that because she is slated to do the outro this episode.
I hate
and it's
doing
her
listen.
Kryptonite.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I can do the outro. I think I can.
It sounds like Seb doing the outro would be Diana's wish. And speaking of wishes.
That was a very halting way of it, like segueing into wishes, but I'm here for it.
Smooth.
Let's go. Let's very fucking smooth. Do it. So, ladies and gents, and none of the above, for anyone who is not familiar with the Atlas Loom, first of all, what the fuck? Should be familiar with us by now. Regardless, we have a lovely little segment at the end of our podcast.
Lovely little segment. The...
I wouldn't say lovely little. It wasn't the fact that Seb was here.
What? Lovely little segment. You
oh,
really
God.
Are. So this, for anyone's curious, is called code switching.
I hate it here. It just sucks.
Which is where you start adopting...
I don't want to code switch into British.
Well,
we fought so hard to not be British.
Tough luck. That's how we get you.
Whole ass war.
That's how we get you.
Well... We just, slowly,
you turn around one day and there's beans all over your toast. That's how
it dang starts. It. There's beans on my toast.
God fucking damn it. It's my favorite part of the Atlas Loom where people are like, who the fuck are these people? Are these just people talking about
podcasting.
Beans? Podcasting. So at the end of every episode, we try to do a little thing where we weave some wishes. We answer your guys' questions about world building, GMing, anything to do with storytelling at broad. And if you want your questions answered, you can email them over to wish@theatlasloom.com. That's wish@theatlasloom.com. We got a couple to answer here today. Seb, I hope you're ready for it.
I'm not.
Okay, so this first question comes from Jason, who uses he, him pronouns, and who says, first off, love the podcast. First of all, thank you so much, Jason. That is an excellent way to get your wish brought up to the top.
Mm-hmm.
This question is mainly rooted around 5e. How do you guys feel, or what's a technique, to deal with world building when the lore is incompatible with some of the classes or races in D&D? Do you think it's best to exclude those classes or races, or change the lore?
Reskin everything. I'm really curious to, without knowing what is like being excluded here specifically from your lore, reskinning, taking a given class, bringing over all the abilities and just kind of like thinking about what you can tweak, what simple either just words or visuals or purpose that it serves that you can tweak to make work in your world. If it is specifically races, that's a little bit harder because, you know, if your world is you're in some world that's entirely robot people or something, you're probably not going to have a wood elf, but you could have a tree forest aligned robot person that happens to have all of the qualities of a wood elf, mechanically speaking. But if it's a class that gets like class abilities that don't really make sense here, maybe this world wouldn't really make sense to have a person running around as a barbarian with a giant battle axe everywhere shirtless. If your world doesn't allow shirtless people with battle axes, first of all, you've made a bad world. Second of all, that's not true. Make whatever world you want. It's perfect. You can absolutely change the meaning behind what their rage is doing. You could change the way that they are actually portrayed. Maybe they are a super soldier instead of a barbarian, and so they've been pumped up to all hell, and their rage is whatever biochemical changes have happened to them taking over, something to that effect. It's not a big beefy dude swinging an axe, but it accomplishes all the same things, and it lets you dial that in specifically to the lore that you have without restricting people too much. But yeah,
I think
reskin all the things.
I completely agree. I think all that a class, or race, whatever is it's just a convenient noun for a collection of abilities, mm-hmm. and do whatever you want within it. And I think sometimes, especially with the way people approach videos and content online and the like, it can come across that there are correct ways or normal ways to play things. And I don't think that needs to be the case at all. So I can't really see a situation where you couldn't just take those same abilities, give them a different name, and make them work just as well.
You can imagine fairly easily as well something along the lines of a world that doesn't have magic at all. How are you going to have a wizard? Maybe they're a mechanical marvel. Maybe they've got a staff that is capable of manipulating the laws of physics to do all sorts of wild things. And it's not magic, but it's still fireball.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's honestly, because when they introduced Artificer into D&D 5e, and again, I'm a 5e girly, I'm so sorry for anyone who watches this podcast and isn't a D&D girl. They essentially were like, yeah, like you're kind of just a caster that functionally your magic looks like mechanics, and that's all it is. It's a shame it wasn't better adopted. But like I made a character once who was a cleric or a paladin or some divine caster who was a hemomancer, a sanguimancer, someone who had blood magic. And as written, there's no blood magic in D&D. It doesn't exist. There's some in supplements, sure, but like generally people don't go with those. Just reflavoring is the best way to go. That's your end answer here.
There was a sanguimancer in 3.5 though, and they were sick.
Oh, really?
They were so good. You could jump into people and then teleport out of someone else's Ooh. Blood. Yeah. Ooh. I missed the sanguimancer.
Thank you so much, Jason, for your question. Honestly, it applies to a lot of circumstances, and I'm very glad you asked it. We have another question in here from Chris, who goes by he, him pronouns, who says, I've run and played in tons of normal exploration and adventuring campaigns, but I've started running a campaign based more about political intrigue and a find the bad guy causing bad things type than I've done before. I'm having trouble moving the party forward towards the investigation parts without railroading them right now. How would you guys manage a campaign like this?
Looming threats. Always have a looming threat. They need something that's going to be pushing them to need to further the investigation. And that's not necessarily railroading. Like, that might feel like railroading sometimes, having some sort of mechanic to require your players to have a fire under their ass. But it's not quite the same. Because especially if you're going with a political intrigue or hidden person pulling all the strings kind of thing, without knowing the specifics, it's likely that they, if they are on the trail, that this person or whatever is trying to stay hidden is aware that they're being tracked down, and they're going to start pushing back, maybe kidnapping somebody and threatening, like, you know, this person that you cared about, if you want them to remain alive, you will stop chasing me. You can give them some sort of heightened stakes. You know, that is a careful what your next move is kind of a thing. But it could also be a you've caught wind that something's going down tomorrow at sunset. And like it's going to be some sort of like massive thing that will set either the party back or maybe the city that they're in is in danger. It's no longer a matter of, oh, well, you know, we can go from place to place, try to collect some clues. It's a matter of we need to get this done. We have to come up with a game plan immediately. What abilities do we have at our disposal? What NPCs do we know? Who can we get connected with who? And what can we do to make this not happen? Threaten them. Threaten the players. Always good.
I think any kind of ticking clock works so well for a narrative. I think a general rule, if there is something on the horizon that will happen if you don't manage to solve X, Y, or Z issue, that's just a great way to keep the narrative moving. I guess one piece of advice on that is do have an idea of what will happen if the investigation goes wrong, because investigations are much, much harder to just go, right, let's stick them in the path of this particular thing that we feel they need to learn or this particular plot point. Because if for an investigation to be satisfying, they do have to work it out themselves. So make sure you've got an idea of what happens if they don't.
Yeah, base general concept there and a good rule of thumb. And I've made videos on this on my personal channel a couple of times, but make sure that not everything that is forward progressing comes down to a skill check, because you have to know what'll happen if they fail that. Making sure that there's multiple routes that eventually head in the same direction. And this is a good rule of thumb when it comes to avoiding railroading in any campaign, any sense, no matter what the theme is making sure that all roads eventually end up where you want them to, but the players in the meantime still have that sense of freedom and free will and personal choice without feeling railroady. Have backup plans.
I also, just as actually almost a little counterpoint to Diana's or alternate path, which is sometimes the failure to succeed at that core plot element can end up being more interesting to a narrative in the long run. I think I've run two different campaigns that function around an investigation where it went very wrong and the players just weren't able to work stuff out. And then one of them ended up on the run because they were framed for the thing. And then that was a really interesting campaign. It was a complete gear shift for me. I do painfully little prep anyway, so it's a little easier for me to say this. Or the other one was that the villain just succeeded in their goal. And then they had to deal with the fallout of that. And it actually just became a bit more of that traditional quest line of now kind of dealing with this person who was in a stronger position of power. You might find that the failure to act on the investigation can yield some really interesting narrative threads for you.
All right. It sounds like an awesome campaign, Chris. Not a lot of people go into investigative type things. So kudos to you. And thank you so much for submitting your question.
Thank you so much for the wishes. As always, if you want to send us a wish to be answered on the podcast, you can send us an email to wish@theatlasloom.com. That is wish@theatlasloom.com. Thank you so very much. So as far as announcements go, you know, we were announcing that we were going to PAX, but we did that and we're back now. So the announcement is now, if you are a Gilded World Weaver, you should look out for, within the next couple of weeks, we're going to be doing a bonus episode, our PAX debrief episode, where Diana and I are going to talk about all the fun things that we did or all of the fun sleeping off a hangover that we did. And yeah, it's going to be a great time. It's going to be fun. And for also way more content, if you head to theatlasloom.com, and again, you can sign up to be a Gilded World Weaver. There's already a ton of bonus content there, and it's piling up. It's a better value every day. And soon enough, it's going to be. How could you afford not to become a Gilded World Weaver
in this economy?
There it is. The next con that we will be both at is going to be Gen Con. And that is going to be a hella good time over in Indianapolis the first week of August. Seb will not be there because he hates fun.
Yeah, it's well documented.
But with all of that said, thank you all so much for listening to this episode of the Atlas Loom. My name is Endeavorance. You can find everything I do at endeavorance.camp. I stream on Twitch. I post on a little app called TikTok. I'm also on the Instagram. I'm there as well. I'm in a lot of places. And also, of course, you can hit up shop.endeavorance.camp if you want to find all of the best, most highest quality, greatest things that you can possibly purchase on the internet, including a suite of Atlas Loom merch. Diana, do you have websites?
Nope, but I do have social media handles.
Those are websites.
Yeah, that works. So I am Diana Faye, better known as Diana the Rose. I am at Diana of the Rose on every platform in existence. I was so fucking lucky to get all those, dude. Holy shit. My business card, it's nice and concise. It's easy. At Diana the Rose. Mostly I am a TikToker, but lately in the thread of TikTok going away, I've been cross-posting to Instagram, YouTube, all of that for all your short form and long form needs. And of course, I'm here at the Atlas Loom. There's a bunch of APs that I'm going to be in coming up in 2024, so to keep an eye on my movements, just go ahead and follow me wherever it is convenient. Seb, what do you do?
I follow you on Instagram, and you don't follow me back is what I do.
Kidding. Is that true?
It is true.
I'm fixing this live on air. I don't know how to do voices.
Things, so you have to find my actual name. I'm Seb. I am How to Do Voices on TikTok, where I talk about a lot of the stuff that I talked about today and many other things as well. You can find me precisely nowhere else, but if you do like things like audiobooks or you just want to keep track of some of the stuff that I do, feel free to look up Sebastian Humphreys. That's H-U-M-P-H-R-E-Y-S. I've got, what have I got coming out soon? There's a great murder mystery book I did called Clickbait, which I think is coming out round about the time this episode is going out, and there's a bunch of other stuff and then various other things that I'm not allowed to talk about as well. I also might be doing things later in the year, who knows.
Well, with all of that said, we do have a professional voice actor with us in the studio here today, so Seb, why don't you take us out?
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Atlas Loom. Our paths will cross again soon, but until then, keep on weaving your world.